on with you for the traffic, because it would be hard to do that on any day, much less like, you know, the day when all the traffic is jammed. That wasn't the most interesting word to use.
What? And it, apparently it's working out by getting this military grade Humvee with a military uplink and a warship that's generating the power for them, and the supercomputer that's got, like, I'm going to make up a number, like 300 billion teraflops or something crazy. All this together, and they're kicking ass, except grandma died, and one of the people in this movie, one of the relatives, one of the few that I remember his name is Shouta, and I remember that because he's always shouting, and I don't know if that was an intentional name to name him Shouta for the guy that's always shouting.
Yeah, actually, Shota, you are making a little your own translation there.
Okay, but, okay.
I like it, but yeah,
Shota. I watched this one in Japanese and I had to read the English subtitles, so it said Shouta, and he kept shouting. So, anyways, Shota, or Shouta, as I'm going to call him, he's processing the grief of Grammy dying a little bit differently than everyone else. So as they're hacking into this huge system and battling this AI, all of a sudden it stops working, and they see that the computer has been overheating, and they're like, why is the computer overheating? Oh, because someone took all the ice out. Well, this dude has been moving all of these big ice blocks that were using the cool supercomputer, and he's putting them around the room where grandma died in, because it's summer and it's the hottest day of summer, and he wants to keep Grammy's corpse cold and fresh for some odd reason. And because of him doing that, essentially destroys their ability to attack the AI using this Super Smash Brothers Brawl style fighting method. So they have to find another way around it, and they end up suggesting, like, hey, I wonder if this AI is so bent on playing games and everything's a game to him, let's challenge him to a game of this, what is it, Hunashan or whatever, Hanafuda, this like card game. But instead of just saying, hey, you want to play Hanafuda, they create an online gambling site, and they lure the AI into the online gambling site, and then essentially just kick its ass that way. But in this case, it's the girl that ends up inviting her friend and starts this entire movie. She's the one that is like the best at playing Hanafuda because her grandma had been teaching them all for their entire lives. So now the entire world is just essentially like sending her accounts, and she's betting accounts against this AI in a big game of like make it take it. So she keeps playing and playing. She wins. She kisses the guy at the end. His nose squirts out blood. He passes out. Credits roll.
That sounds about right.
Did I miss anything major in there? I'm sure I did.
I think you got a lot of things. The one thing I'll just add in, because it was big news at the time, I don't remember what the name of the satellite of course the AI gets, he's a sore loser, so Love Machine points the satellite right at their house. And I don't remember the name, but the one that actually, I guess, is still in space is Hayabusa, which was that was a big accomplishment of JAXA, the Japanese space program, apparently. And then the control center for Hayabusa is Saku City, which is one town, two towns past Ueda. So about a 30-minute drive from here. So, there's just that was in the news and the science, you know, there was a big science thing at the time when this movie came out. So they're kind of tying that in as well.
And I didn't really get that either, though. If it still had the ability to wreak havoc, was it just playing by the rules? Was it just being a good gentleman AI by being like, all right, you win, here's all the accounts, but on the way out, I'm going to like screw you guys. But again, it started with just one account being compromised, and then they mentioned that 55 got compromised, and then it keeps growing to like 4 million, 20 million, 400 million. So it seems that if this AI is smart enough, it could have just reaccumulated all those accounts again. It's not like it was just going to end forever, but again, plot hole.
Well, we're also looking at, you know, like AI in 2009. It's like, well, where does it have its strengths and weaknesses? I mean, we don't even know that now, you know?
In that regard, it was a little bit ahead of its time, I guess, because it seemed like you can watch this movie right now and it seems like it's a current movie.
Except for those flip phones. Yeah.
Yeah, and like the old iOS like UI that had just come out, the big blue buttons.
Do you still see people running around the States like old folks with a flip phone?
No, old folks here have cricket phones. I don't know if you know what those are, but they're like the little phones just have huge numbers on them, and they don't really do anything smart.
Okay. Yeah, they got the burners, right? So you'll still see some old folks in Japan that have the K-Tai, the flip phones. So maybe it's not, but yeah, you will not see a teenager with one like you do in this movie. That's not going to happen.
Another interesting note that I noticed is after, you know, I guess they save the world, this online gambling casino thing that takes down the AI, it wins. And then you see a news reporter, because they do keep splicing, but they keep cutting to like this news report and the baseball game constantly throughout the movie to kind of give it this like common thread. And maybe just like some vague semblance of sanity for people that aren't perpetually online to kind of like hold on to stable ground. It's like, okay, here's a news program. But at the end, the news program is like, thankfully there were no casualties. And the first thing I was wondering, like, what about grandma? Wasn't grandma literally a casualty of this AI? Because we also find out another plot line that one of her many family members is a like surgeon or into like medical technology and has a like bug planted inside of her body that's monitoring her heart rate and her blood pressure and her brain activity and just all sorts of health related things. And he's got a smart app that lets him open it up at any time to see how grandma's doing. But because of this AI causing havoc in the Oz world, that app stops working because data is having the exact same kind of traffic congestion as real life traffic is. So he doesn't get the alert in time to go and save grandma. So technically she dies because this AI takes over. So she couldn't have been the only person that died because of that. So when the news comes out and says no casualties, I shouted at my TV. I said, fake news. And it also makes me sad that I guess fake news is something that we'll never get over. Even if we can save the world from nuclear implosion, fake news is going to be there right afterwards and give you a lie right to your face.
Yeah. Also, you're talking like, you know, probably NHK, state media or whatever, and it hasn't made it. That news hasn't made it there. Like maybe they've reported Granny's death to the city office by the end of the movie, or maybe not. It's only been like a day, right? So, they're like, oh, no casualties. Great, because no one fell out of the sky, I guess. You know, there were none of the obvious deaths.
Yeah, no casualties from the explosion and from, like, the satellite itself. But the way, it's not like no casualties reported yet. It was like, oh, and thank God we've got good news. No casualties. Like, I mean, even earlier in the movie when these traffic jams are happening, there's a fireman because in addition to all this infrastructure, the AI has taken over the like water pressure regulation systems in the city. It gets pretty complex. And now all of a sudden the firemen are getting these alerts to put out a fire and they show up and there's no fire there. And he makes this comment like, if this keeps happening, we're not going to have the ability to address the real emergencies happening. So there had to be all sorts of people that needed their oxygen tank to work, or like a house was burning down and they just die in flames because the fire truck can't get there. A, because they didn't get the alert to put them in the right place, but also B, even if they do get the alert, the roads are freaking jammed and they can't get there in time, which is the same thing that kills grandma.
Yeah. I guess it's just difficult sometimes for, for anybody doing the news to parse like what is actually a casualty, you know, what's a kind of a 1 degree away casualty or 2 or 3 degrees, you know? I mean, you know, it's probably a series of unfortunate events that kills all of us in the end.
Right. And again, the movie itself, I'm going to just assume at least one person has died from an epileptic seizure from just watching this, because I don't have epilepsy, but I felt so overstimulated throughout the course of this entire movie, because when they go into this virtual world, man, and this is like, you know, beyond just a regular anime, they go into the virtual world and in some of these scenes there's like thousands of things going on, like there's all these avatars flying around and some of them are shopping and some of them are fighting, and the cuts in this movie too, when it gets really chaotic, it's like 2 to 3 second clips as it's jumping around, there's people battling, and it was hard to like not feel like I was like hyped up on some sort of meth as I was watching this, which maybe is a good thing.
Yeah. And for the Japanese audience, like of course, all the stuff at the house and stuff was very foreign to you. But for a Japanese viewer, all that stuff is extremely like homey and comforting. So then you have the whiplash of going into the insane digital world, which, you know, it's kind of like showing a Norman Rockwell painting and then going into that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that is an interesting juxtaposition in this movie, though, because they're going from this basically 16th century sort of plot of land where it's fairly traditional, right? I mean, they've got modern amenities, but it's like a calm, wide open spot, and then into this chaotic virtual world. So I do kind of like them jumping between all these. If the entire movie happened in that virtual world, I don't think I could have taken it.
Oh God, no. That's what I was saying. He was trying to make it like a mixture of uncluttered and cluttered. Like, obviously there's so many things going on that makes it cluttered, but all the specific designs are relatively clean, you know? Like, think of it if it was this with like a bunch of like film transformers, you know? That would have looked like a hot mess.
Well, or Digimon, right?
Yeah.
The Digimon version, if this were all Digimon, then you were mentioning that Digimon can materialize in the real world. So you kind of lose that nice juxtaposition of like, all right, let's take a breather. We're back in the real world where there's grass and houses and people. In the Digimon version, it's like, and there's a Digimon monster out on that grass.
Anyway, my main observation, just looking over my notes a bit, is that Natsuki is crap at the ukulele, but yeah.
That's the main
especially note. The first time. She's terrible the first time she's playing.
There was one scene in particular, there was two that I laughed out loud because I was not expecting either of these things to happen. One of it, again, I guess, spoiler is a little bit late because we just broke down the entire plot. But spoiler, at the very end, when the girl kisses the boy after he kind of like they both sort of save the world, blood just starts spurting out of his nose. His eyes roll into the back of his head and he passes out and the credits roll. That caught me so off guard. I just had like a weird laugh about it. But also earlier in the movie, when he first shows up at grandma's house, I guess traditionally after dinner, everyone disrobes and goes into a steam room together. So you see like the kids and like the adults, they're all just naked in this like bathhouse. And he's, you know, he stays away because he's not in the family. And apparently this family, they all get naked together, but guests are not allowed to get naked with the family. Or maybe he just feels too awkward about it and they're being weird. But after this is all over, someone tells him like, oh, you know, go and take a bath. And as he's going into the bathroom, he sees his like fake girlfriend coming out and she's totally nude. And he makes this weird noise. It's kind of like a combination between a woo and a whoa, but the camera is behind his shoulder. And as he's saying this, his lips are like flapping furiously and he passes out again, or he kind of like faints a little bit. The scene and the way that his lips flap and everything about it, like it just caught me so off guard. I actually snorted.
I guess just to answer your question, and during this time at my family's house, you do dinner, and it's not like everyone goes here. It's like my two nephews would go take a bath together. And then like the ladies and the girls would go, and then like my in-laws might go, and then I'd probably go at the end because I stayed up later and everyone. And then for like a big day, you know, like New Year's Eve, since there's so much, a few ladies might stay to prepare stuff and everyone else like drives to a hot spring. So but that is, you know, male female disconnected, right? There's two
even without like the group part of it. It's just weird, like everyone goes to grandma's house, they have a huge meal, and then there's like a line outside the shower, like everyone just needs to take a shower now after they had dinner. I don't know, it's a weird cultural divide.
Well, Japanese, and I think most Asians are into nighttime bath or shower. In Japan, it's bath, you know, even the shower part. I use a shower. I'm American, but other people in my family, they'll just like scoop water out of the bath and dump it on their head.
And I was wondering too, is this just because they eat so much squid? And they were just like, oh, it just makes you sweat like squid juice after you eat dinner. So they have to.
Well, everyone thought the squid was weird. I mean, a little bit of squid is fine, but it was like just insane amounts of squid. At the end, they're eating the fried squid, which I've never had the balls to eat one of those, by the way. I'll eat sushi squid. I'll eat calamari. No, where it's like that on the stick and it's like shaped like the squid.
But you'll eat whale cum.
That was an accident.
Okay.
I didn't know what it was until after eating it. It was also fried. I was like, what is this? Is this a fritter? Is this cream cheese inside? No, it's not cream cheese. So, yeah, you occasionally accidentally eat some weird stuff. But, it was pretty funny that the guy showed it with all squid, because when they opened it, you expect to see a sashimi. You know, that's sushi without the rice, right? Where it's just like you'd see some tuna, some salmon, a little squid, and there'd be a whole variety of stuff. So just the all squid is kind of a joke.
One of the uncles pops up and he's got three huge coolers and he opens one and it's like squid and everyone's happy. And he opens another one. Everyone's like more squid and they're happy. And he opens a third one and it's still squid. And at that point, everyone's like, so we're just eating squid. I have this right.
Yeah, that is bad news at a certain point. My laugh out loud moment, by the way, was the ice having been moved by an idiot.
I mean, I assume that there's no real why, because his grandma, like the matriarch of this entire family, just died. So he's just processing in a weird way. But like, what are you trying to do, bud? Like, grandma's dead. Like, she is clearly dead. But I guess he just wants her to be comfortable in her dead body.
Yeah, he's listed as a 21-year-old police officer who is extremely protective of Natsuki. Okay, so this is his plot description on Wiki.
One of the plot lines for this police officer, because in this family you basically have one of everything. Like in this family, there is every single profession represented, up to and including, we mentioned that there's this baseball game going on in the background. They keep cutting to. The reason why is because the pitcher on this baseball team that's going through all of these championships is, you guessed it, another relative of this family. And just like that police officer, he's a relative of the family. And another plot point that I intentionally left out just because it seemed like it would overcomplicate it even more is that the protagonist in this movie, this guy that gets pulled off and has to act as a fake fiance, and he's a polymath and he hacks into Oz and he does all this stuff. But apparently, coincidentally, he gets blamed for being the hacker at the very beginning of the movie. So the police officer cousin decides to arrest him and tries to bring him into town, but, you know, runs into this traffic jam. So that fizzles out and he gets back home. But they keep referencing that the crime, it was a pleasure crime. And even the kids are like, what's a pleasure crime? And one of them's like, it's a crime that makes you feel good. And he laughs. But I was wondering that too. Like, what is pleasure crime? Is that an actual term that you're familiar with, or was that just part of this movie?
I don't know. Because there are plenty of Japanese terms where I may have even heard them a lot, but I don't know like the real specific, like how you'd translate it.
I get the idea what they were trying to convey, that it was like a crime of like fun, like someone just vandalizes, you know, like spray paints a building because they're having fun doing it. But would graffiti be considered a pleasure crime?
Sure, that's, graffiti sounds fun, right?
Right, that's gonna be one of my new friends. I'm never gonna forget the term pleasure crime, so I'm gonna find ways to shoehorn that in all over the place now.
See, when you finish working with some finish at the work day, I could say at the end of this podcast, I could be like, let's carne samadeshta. I could say it sounds good. I don't actually know what all those terms specifically mean. I guess it's like we did a good job or thanks for the work today. But yeah, I don't know specifically what that means, but I know I say it at the end of the day because it's considered rude not to.
Well, I wish you luck in all of your pleasure crimes.
Why, thank you. Do you have any pleasure crimes in your notes? We've intimated a few. We got the Department of Defense. We've got, we can think about Meta. Although I think, have we collectively said no to Meta? Or is it still getting shoved down our throats slowly?
Oh, I mean, that's not something that you or I get to have a say in, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, it came out in 2020, 2021, somewhere around there. And so far, no one gives a crap about it, it seems.
Well, here's the way that it works in my mind. Because Zuckerberg's the only one that really knows how this Meta thing's going to work. But it started out with just the regular old Facebook social network. And then in the early to mid-2000s, you had all these Facebook games, and that became massive. That's what ended up getting all of like the moms and the grandmas into spending all their time on Facebook, because they could do Candy Crush and Farmville and all that. I don't know if you remember any of that, if you were part of that. Like, like the Farmville thing. And then the next iteration of that is that the Oculus Rift came out, right? The little VR headset thing. So now that was what was supposed to be like this big metaverse, is that now anyone that kind of interacts with whatever the next iteration of Farmville would be, or anyone that puts on one of these meta headsets, that is this new meta virtual world. But the thing is that it's still very much only for early adopters. I don't think most people have gotten into this like online virtual thing. And also, from what I understand, as soon as Facebook took over the Oculus Rift headset, which they purchased, they didn't invent that. That came from Lucky Palmer, and it was sort of like its own thing. And then Facebook acquired it, and then he just starts putting everything into it. And I believe he has sank probably like $500 million into this meta network thing that hasn't necessarily taken off. But whenever you've got a sort of a real life supervillain like Mark Zuckerberg clearly is, even if he's in his glow up phase, if he's sank that much money into something, I don't think it's just something you like turn your back on and walk away from. The sunken cost fallacy must be so strong on this. So I feel that if anything, we might regret not entertaining him wanting to push Metaverse on us, because the next step is going to be almost compulsory. Like, you're going to have to join the Metaverse if you want to survive. I think that'll be the next iteration. And then it'll big.
See, I'm asking not out of like complete naivete, but in Japan, like, nobody uses Facebook anymore. Everyone I interact with Facebook, I mostly just use Messenger if I use it. And that's, you know, like Americans.
I think it's the same here, man. Same in the States. No one really uses the Metaverse. The only people using it is because they literally have to, because, or if you have one of these Oculus headsets, you cannot take part in the ecosystem. You can't play games or download anything. You can't even connect to it unless you create a Facebook Meta account. And in that case, it's just like a thing that you have to do in order to play with this expensive toy that you bought. That most people don't really care about that aspect of it. But he wants people to buy the headset to play, you know, like Beat Saber or whatever the game is that you want to play. And then he kind of shoehorns you into like having to create this Meta account, thinking that that would take over at some point. At some point, someone's going to be like, I don't even want to play games. I just want to create my little virtual house and buy virtual objects and wallpapers. But I don't think that part ever took off. I assume that the end result here is super soldiers. Like, there's no other reason for this to exist outside of the CIA or the Pentagon or the DOD wanting to create super soldiers out of children. They just haven't figured out a way to do that yet, and it hasn't really been a success in any sort of regard.
Yeah, because the big social media platforms here, this movie is sort of based on something called Mixi, which everyone had a Mixi account in 2009, 2010. I guess that's kind of like, you know, the Japanese like MySpace era sort of thing. And now I said I use Facebook Messenger for people in the States. I use a Line for everyone in Japan, which is, I don't think that's a program that's popular at all in the States, which that's our TikTok, I guess. It's, you know, I think it's from China, and they're probably getting, or they are getting all your data from Line. But yeah, that, like, you know, I got a work Line with all my coworkers, so that's how we communicate work stuff.
Yeah, I guess the way that I was seeing this thing they call Oz, which I guess is going to be like a metaverse from Facebook. But if you just combined TikTok and MySpace and Instagram and Facebook and all these things together and made it so that the government and everyone's actually using this, not just in superficial ways, that's kind of what Oz is.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we got the Line friends. They're popular. They look like the cuter, you know, avatars you get in Oz in this movie. So,
There's another interesting plot line in here too, which it makes it relevant why this grandma's the head of this huge clan that dates back to at least the 16th century, or at the latest the 16th century. But that we get a weird little history lesson, and I didn't look this up. I'm going to assume that it was accurate, but maybe you can correct me. But it was the second siege of Ueda.
Oh yeah, completely accurate.
Okay, I mean, it is like the shortest Cliff Notes version, but they describe that it's in the second siege of Ueda that the family were outnumbered by a rival army. And the way that they defeat this army is they sort of lure them into the castle gates, making them think that they've just, like, you know, gained, like, secret entry. And as soon as the army gets inside the gates, they close the gates behind them. So now this outnumbered army is able to take on this army that is now encapsulated and outside of their, you know, they're their way team, and they have no way to retreat, and they lose. And that's what it gives them, this idea, like, oh, how can we do a second siege of Ueda to this virtual AI? And someone says, an online gambling site. We lure, you know, the same way that they lured the army into the castle gates, they're going to lure this AI into these literal castle gates of an online casino. And they actually show in the virtual world, like you were mentioning, this huge castle kind of like erupts of all these different like little modular buildings. The AI goes inside of it, and you see all these avatars running around, shutting all the doors, showing that they've kind of like captured this AI beast. And then I'm not sure exactly how this works, but in the virtual world, the firemen relatives of Grandpa, they go into the virtual world where they're also virtual firemen, and they hook up little like tubes, and then they start filling the gates filled with water, trying to drown the AI, I guess. This is where it started breaking down to me, because it's like, are you actually just going to drown AI with virtual water in this virtual world? And why are they virtual firemen? And are all of these analogies that they're all like hacking and doing math, or are they literally just spraying virtual water on a AI avatar?
It doesn't seem as helpful. The way to think, the family, the royal family, is the Sanada clan. So, and they have the symbol of, it's six circles. It's called the Rakumon, and you see it everywhere and around Ueda, like the special swank train is the Rakumon train. But if anyone watched the Shogun series last year, or the one from 3 years ago, I don't remember what they call him in that, but it's basically Tokugawa, Ieyasu Tokugawa. And Ueda is the one place he could not take, basically, and become Shogun over. So Ueda is kind of the rebel city. So they're right about being, you know, proud warriors, the basketball team around here. As I said, I'm not into basketball, but we have the Brave Warriors as the basketball team around here. So
there's another interesting analogy in this movie where they're talking about the grand, and even Grandma shows that she's got the chops. Like, I don't know what the actual weapon was called, but it's like a long stick with a knife at the end of it. I'm sure there's like an official name for this thing, but she like is attacking the original developer of the AI, which is also a family member. She's attacking him with this big thing. But then we see towards the end of the movie, the warrior spirit of people has been reduced to playing online games and computer hacking, which was kind of sad to like think that this is what a modern version of warrior is. A modern version of like the biggest war you've got is just like a skinny Matthew Broderick logging into his computer and playing tic-tac-toe. And but there's actually a scene when the entire family gathers around the protagonist, and he's like doing math, and they're like, yeah, you can do it, like get him. And he's just like calculating numbers, and it's like, man, this is sort of pathetic. Can be like, you see this family of actual warriors getting this guy on to do math, and he's like coding. Also, as a coder, as a lifelong software engineer, the absolute worst way to work is with someone standing over your shoulder yelling at you. Like, you can do it. Like, just imagine, it's like a very like pensive, slow, like a internal process. There's not a single time in my entire life, and I think I'll speak on behalf of all computer programmers, when you're trying to like figure out a complex solution and people behind you just going, you can do it, type faster. That never would help anyone. Yet it kind of happens in this.
Well, maybe that's why he's got a nosebleed.
Yeah, as he starts typing, at a certain point, he stops typing because I guess it's slowing him down. And he just starts staring directly at the screen. And he like starts sweating profusely. And he starts like shakes a little bit. And some of the family members are like, oh my God, he's doing mental math. That blood just starts trickling out of his nose. And you're like, wow, this just got really, again, this is the 2024, or I guess 2009, but this is like the 21st century version of a Japanese warrior, is a computer nerd sitting behind a screen with a nosebleed doing math. That is essentially the analogy that we've seen here.
That's pretty much, I guess. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, that makes sense, because think about it, if you're watching this and say you're a teenager and you're going to school and having to get ready for these insane entrance exams and stuff. This guy's a hero and he's bashful like me, because nobody knows how to get a date in Japan.
And I guess, speaking of, the relationship angle of this movie is so weird. And maybe this is another cultural thing, or maybe it's a weird movie thing. So the guy has a crush on the girl. The girl, it doesn't seem like she really cares that much about the guy. She's got the hots for her cousin. Like, her cousin, when he leaves, she's just crying nonstop. Even towards the very end of the movie, in the last 5 minutes, she's still crying about the cousin that she cannot have. Yet she's kind of like talking to this guy and she's like, hold my hand so I stop crying. And he holds her hand and she starts crying even more. And then the grandma, before she dies, she's like, hey, even though I know that this was all a lie, I still want you to take care of her. And I think that she means, like, I still want you to marry my granddaughter. It's so weird, though. And the entire time, they don't talk to each other. Like, they don't seem to have anything in common whatsoever. They share absolutely no discussions, only the point when she's like, hold my hand, as she's crying about the loss of love for her, like, distant cousin that she wanted to bang this whole time since kindergarten.
Maybe that is the biggest plot hole for me, then. Yeah, because that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The poster for the movie, the ones, because like I said, before I saw the movie, I went around for several years seeing the posters everywhere, which has Natsuki front and center, like with a little flag or whatever. And you just kind of assume she's the main character, which, I mean, she's like, maybe, I mean, if this was live action, she might be second or third on the call sheet or whatever.
Well, she's the one that essentially does beat the AI overall, because she's the one that plays the best game of Hanafuda and wins against the AI by gambling. Like, she gambles better than she is, you know, like Poker World Championships. Like, she wins that. So I guess she's kind of the one that makes that happen. And the guy just kind of facilitates that because he hacks another encryption key and gets a password in order to get her access so that they can create this online virtual casino and lure the AI into. There's so many things that happen in this movie that are so abstract, but they do a really great way of like visualizing all of this.
Right. I'm trying to remember what the name of this show is. Oh, Sanada Maru. If anyone really is interested about the history of this, I mean, in a dramatic form, there's a Sanada Maru was about 10 years ago as an NHK show. It's got 50 episodes, so it's kind of long, but it was a big hit at the time. It upped tourism even more than this movie. That NHK drama started getting lots of tourists in our town, so it was a big thing in Japan.
In what context? What was the show about?
About what you were talking about, the 17th century Tokugawa trying to take Ueda and failing, and the second siege of Ueda Castle and all that sort of stuff. It's dramatized in that series. So
I mean, this movie really does have it all, right? It's got baseball, it's got Japanese sort of like history of these different clans, it's got incest, it's got gambling, it's got death, it's got life,
leisure,
it's
got crimes,
squid, it's got pleasure crimes, it's got AI, it's got nuclear warfare, it's got sort of satellites falling out of space. There's so many things that this movie encapsulates. It's almost hard to imagine they were able to fit, and they introduce like 30 plus characters to the point where each character does have a unique personality. Like, I don't know. I don't know how they did it, but they did it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess that's why it's critically acclaimed. Put a pin in as well. I've only seen this movie, not Summer Wars, but the movie I'm about to mention, I've only seen once. And it will be interesting for comparison when we do make it to Ralph Breaks the Internet. So,
I can see a correlation there. There's our Disney reference. We needed at least one for this episode. So yeah, this is sort of a precursor to Ralph Breaks the Internet in a way.
Like, I think that movie, if I remember, takes place completely in the virtual space, but that, you know, it's worth comparison. So I've only seen that one once, though. So I've seen Wreck-It Ralph probably three or four times, but I've only seen Ralph Breaks the Internet once. So we will return to that. This one looks like was distributed by Warner Brothers in the States, and I'm not sure how much they distributed it, because you didn't find it
easily. Well, that was the version that I found floating on the ocean, it started with the Warner Brothers logo in the beginning. So I don't know if that was indicative of the version that I found.
Yeah, I have no clue how this movie played in the States, if at all in a theater or whatever, if it went straight to video. So,
and another interesting fact that Wreck-It Ralph is also a second cousin of Vanellope. So, and there was a love interest there. So I guess that's where they got that incest plot line from, was maybe from this movie.
Because, yeah, that's what you want to take from it. It's like they need to sit down and draw out the family tree. That was one of the more fun Carrie Fisher bits, where she was talking about how when her Billy Piper, her daughter, wanted to date someone, she had to basically sit her down at a blackboard, and they had to work out all the tangled family trees of Hollywood families to figure out if she could date this guy or not or something. It's like, you might be related, you know.
I think this is actually something they do for fun in Mormon families on weekends, is like figure out, you know, who you're allowed to date.
That's their version of Hanafuda. Yeah.
This is actually the reason they send Mormons on missions, I think. It has nothing to do with spreading the word of Joseph Smith. It's because you got to send them to Africa in order to find someone they're not already related to.
And you will see them in Japan as well. I think people are wearing bike. I think the bike laws have gotten a little bit more strict, but especially 10 years ago, the only people you'd see wearing helmets while riding bicycle were, you know, children under 7 and Mormons. That was it.
They got precious cargo up there, man.
Yeah, yeah. Do we go into all of the rabbit holes?
God, I hope so. If we missed anything, I don't even know what it is, because I don't even know what life is anymore after all of these notes and everything that I'm used to. Good old American movies where like maybe there's two subplots, not like 50.
Okay, well, next week we got another brain melter for y'all, a noodle cooker for y'all, which is Your Name is the American title, Kimi no Na wa is the Japanese title, because Your Name is kind of it's like when you try looking up like the band the, you know, you're just gonna have a trouble on a Google search with that. So
well, the name of this movie even is, it's so underselling it, Summer Wars. Like, I what do you even expect going into a movie called Summer Wars? What would be a better name for this movie though? Like Inbred, Granny on Ice, Baseball, Nuclear, AI, Gambling, Casino, Nintendo Movie. Like, it's like there's no way to really encapsulate what happens in this.
Yeah, they couldn't go with Oz. That would also be confusing.
Right. Yeah, the fact that it's even called Oz doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. There I think there was an explanation to why it's called Oz, but I don't know if I can actually nail that. For a color design, Oz, blah, blah, blah. Okay, inspiration for the name of the social network Oz came from a large supermarket that he once visited. So it was based on the Oz supermarket, which is
the inside of this guy's brain would probably, you know, send both of us into seizures for sure.
All right. Speaking of seizures, what do you have going on now for your 50 projects of this year? I don't know if they call it seizures. I was trying to segue. Now it seems a little sweaty.
Well, I actually put a video out on my YouTube. So if you go to Paranoid American or Patreon or YouTube or anywhere, I've got a video called 20 Projects for 2025. And that's just 20 of the like 50 things that I got going on. That's probably a better introduction to them. The highlights are a pamphlet on the Satanic Panic, Bigfoot, Titanic, some new playsets coming out this year. And also, as of today, allegedly, Trump is going to release the unredacted and declassify all the JFK, RFK, and MLK files. So I sense that I might be doing a few long format videos on that deep dive, because there is really no bigger American conspiracy theory in my mind than the JFK assassination. So that might be the theme for this year, is all JFK. And I guess what a perfect time to mention a very ambitious 200 plus page graphic novel that I've been working on for close to 7 years now, called Lee's Demons, which is originally titled Lee Harvey Oswald Demon Hunter, which might give you a better idea of what it's about. But it's about Lee Harvey Oswald being trained by Papa Legba, who is essentially the Haitian voodoo stand between guy between life and death. He kind of sits at like the gates of the different realms And he becomes the mentor of Lee Harvey Oswald and helps him hunt down demons. And through that process, JFK loses his life. I don't want to give around the whole entire plot line, but it's got everything you can imagine. In fact, it might give this movie a run for its money in terms of weird tangents it goes on.
All right. Yeah, actually, speaking of very recent things, what was the AI announcement yesterday? Was Trump announcing Love Machine to us or what?
Yeah, well, he announced a $500 billion initiative to invest into AI. He brought Sam Altman of OpenAI into the fold, and then Elon Musk immediately started tweeting out, like, they don't have that kind of budget. They don't have that kind of technology. And then Sam Altman goes, uh-huh. And then Elon goes, nuh-uh. So maybe we're going to see like some really serious nerd wars going on. Originally, it was, again, just like this movie, right? It was going to start out as a physical battle, but that's old world. Remember when Zuckerberg was going to like wrestle Elon, but then Zuckerberg actually showed that he like got into shape and he's got a tan now and he's got like a jersey like sort of like a Edgar haircut going on, and Elon was like, whoa, I might actually get my ass kicked by this guy, and they cancel that. Well, now Elon Musk is picking fights with like hardcore computer nerds that haven't had glow ups yet, so he's picking fights with Sam Altman. So I don't see any way that humanity benefits from any of these kind of things, but we're gonna see what happens when you throw $500 billion of fuel into one of these fires.
I guess I'll move on to my own bit of a plug. If you look down, you'll see podcastiopodcastius.org. I do a lot of podcasting there at Films and Filth. We just did Mulholland Drive since David Lynch had his passing. I mean, he's 78, I guess not untimely, but still a bummer. And hey, if you go scroll back a few years in that feed, you will find another thing about Summer Wars recorded pretty much in the location of Summer Wars. So dig that, if you will.
If you didn't get enough Summer Wars, yeah, that's your chance to double down.
Yeah, you double down and just drown in it, you know? But, yeah. Okay, I guess we gotta hop that Shinkansen back to Tokyo then.
Yeah, I got some pleasure crimes to do.
Ready for a cosmic conspiracy about Stanley Kubrick, moon landings, and the CIA? Go visit NASAComic.com.
NASAComic.com. CIA's biggest con. Stanley Kubrick put us on. That's why we're singing this song. I'm NASAComic.com. Go visit NASAComic.com. Go visit NASAComic.com. CIA's biggest con. Stanley Kubrick put us on. That's why we're singing this song. I'm NASAComic.com. Go visit NASAComic.com. Go visit NASAComic.com. Yeah, go visit NASAComic.com.
Never a Straight Answer is a 40-page comic about Stanley Kubrick directing the Apollo space missions. This is the perfect read for comic, Kubrick, or conspiracy fans of all ages. For more details, visit NASAComic.com.
Paranoid. I scribble my life away, driven to write the page. Will it enlighten your brain? Give you the flight, my plane. Paper, the highs ablaze. Somewhat of an amazing feel when it's real. The real, you will engage it. Your favorite, of course, the lord of an arrangement. I gave you the proper results to hit the pavement. If they get emotional, hey, maybe your language, a game. How they playing it well without Lakers. Evade them, whatever the cost, they are the shapeshift. Snakes get decapitated, met is the apex. Execution of flame, you are. out nuclear bomb, distributed at war, rather gruesome for eyes to see. Max them out, then I light my trees, blow it off in the face. You're despising me for what though? Calculated and rather cutthroat, paranoid American, must be all the blood smoke for real. Lord, give me a day away, vacate. They wait around to hate whatever they say. Man, it's not in the least bit. We get heavy rotate when the beat hits. So thank us, you're welcome. Fuck the niggas for real. You're welcome. They ain't never had a deal. You're welcome. Man, they lacking appeal. You're welcome. Yet they doing it still. You're welcome.